This podcast is brought to you by NetBank. Whether you're thinking of franchising your business, buying into or revamping your franchise, stay tuned for tips on how to grow your brand and portfolio.
Welcome to NetBank Franchise Podcast, powered by NetBank. I'm your host, Charles Shen. Today in the studio, we have Richard McIver. Richard is the co-founder of Cash Converters. Richard, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Charles, and thank you for the opportunity.
Take us through, like, when you were a child, what did you want to do growing up? Was this always your big dream to say, I'm going to open up franchise stores and take over the world? Or
no, I don't think so. I suspect along the line that I always wanted to do something myself in the context of my own business, primarily because of the family background. So my family on my father's side are small business owners. My grandfather arrived in the country in 1897 from Lebanon, started up a general dealer in a small town in the Eastern Cape called Barkley East, which amazingly is still operating today, McIver Brothers, four or five generations later. And I always thought that I would end up doing something myself. In fact, my wife says that I'm unemployable because I take instruction poorly. So I figured it would be something in business, but never thought that it would be franchising per se in general, or specifically in the industry that I chose. So I don't think there are many people out there that would have aspired to become pawnbrokers or secondhand dealers or microlenders. It's just not an aspirant industry to look towards.
Okay, so I believe you also had a very, very interesting exchange student story. You studied B-commerce, so the exchange student was
It was before, yes. So I finished school in 79. In 80, I went to America as an exchange student, primarily because I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I left Cape Town in January of 1980 and arrived 200 miles north of Detroit in Michigan about a week later, from 20 degrees Celsius in South Africa to minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit in America. A really, really cold arrival. And the first thing that I did when I got there, the family that I joined, took me straight to the outfitters, and we put some clothes on me that wouldn't freeze because I arrived in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. And the next thing we did was drive straight into a drive-through at McDonald's, because, of course, South Africa didn't have McDonald's in those days. And I was, we'd grown up in the culture of American TV, and we'd seen a lot about McDonald's. So it was a Big Mac, large fries, and a Coke.
Do you still remember the first bite? Was it as good as advertised?
Yes, it was. It was great.
And then how long were you in America for?
So I spent a year in America, traveled around America while I was there as a Rotary exchange student, as I said. Came back to South Africa, spent 2 years in the military in those days, and then went to UCT. Finished up with a BCom there, moved from UCT to Johannesburg for my first stint in the late 80s, and joined Gencor, in fact, their mining house. My major is IT and accounting, and my first job was as a PC technician. And the first PC that I received from IBM as a delivery was an XT twin floppy drive. It had 300
floppy drive. Correct. Explain to the millennials that don't know what that is. What is a floppy?
So it's like a record, but it's literally floppy. It's a movable storage device that should live in a museum these days. The irony of it is that whole PC had 360 kilobytes worth of storage on it. It cost 15,000 Rand in 1986.
Wow.
And obviously, it was a different age. That organization ran on mainframe IBM computers. They called them 370s in those days. And that mainframe took up two floors of General Mining House in the CBD of Joburg. In today's world, our cell phones have more computing power than that whole mainframe.
No, it's scary when you think of it. So when you were in the States, did you see any companies there or businesses back then that you said that, wow, this is a real, really, really cool business concept. I'd love to have one of those.
So I'll tell you two stories that'll show you how many mistakes a person can make in a business career. So the first thing that I saw when I was in America was the Weber Braai. And I looked at this lot, and first of all, the Yanks put charcoal in it, where we bry in South Africa with wood. So, and of course, when I was growing up, we made a bry on the ground, and we took our roaster and put it on top, and the chops and the horse were there. So I looked at this thing and thought, there's no chance that Weber's would ever succeed in South Africa, and moved on. Of
course, ouch.
Yes.
Ouch.
History was made. Every second house has one just about in the country. And probably the biggest mistake that I ever made was an exposure to cell phones. So in those days, it was the old Motorola that literally looked like a car battery. And again, I looked at this lot and said, why would anybody want to carry around a cell phone, you know? And as we well know, there are now more cell phones in South Africa than there are people.
Well, speaking of which, how many cell phones do you own? One or two or three?
I only own one.
Only one?
Yes.
Okay. And 94 to now, and I believe as of this year, you have more than 80 stores, 84 to be exact.
So in fact, we're nearing on 90 now, 90 cash converter stores over that period of time. And our journey has evolved over time. In 94, when we started out, we brought the PostNet business to South Africa at the same time. We've also been involved in the multi-serve business, the shoe cobbler business, which we bought and sold. We've established, in fact, the first social franchise in the country called Stort for All. And we're also into serviced and furnished offices. But over the years, we've divested of everything besides cash converters and focused on the cash converter business.
Richard, I believe you and your partner, Peter, you guys go way back, like varsity back.
Yes, many years ago. In fact, in the previous century, we met in 1981. So almost 40 years ago through university and joined up as partners in 1994 in our business.
So it just sounds like business all along. Did you work for anybody? Or did you do an internship at your grandfather's store as a kid?
So it started out, we grew up in Cape Town. My dad was a chartered accountant. He had a small auditing firm, and he was in and out of businesses all of his life in the context of joining partnerships with clients of his. So he would have numerous businesses that he would be talking about at the dinner table. I remember he had a Bucky canopy making business. He partnered with a fiberglass swimming pool business. And he was involved in an ironmongery business at some point in time. And so there have always been many businesses around. And it was really about understanding the process of business models, the different types of businesses that interested me.
And tell me something, like, walk us through your daily routine. Like, what time do you wake up every day? What's the first thing that you do? How do you prime your mind?
So I'm quite a routine type of guy. We generally get up quite early in the morning, anywhere from 5 o'clock. I enjoy gardening a lot, so I try to spend some time in the garden. I try to get to work in and around 7 o'clock. I've got kids who've just left school, so it used to be a case of I'd do the morning run. And school was kind of between home and where I work in Midrand. And so I'd get to the office probably around about 7 o'clock, just past 7.
Okay. Are you an avid reader?
I am, in fact. I'm one of those guys that reads a lot, but I read multiple books simultaneously and have a bit of a struggle trying to finish them off. So I'll give you an idea of what I've been reading recently. I've just finished something called French Women Don't Get Fat.
What's it about?
Literally, French women not getting fat. it's to do with different cultural eating habits and the like. As I'm getting older, I'm finding I'm not quite as slim and fit as I was previously.
Yeah, metabolism slows down.
Absolutely. Mm. Also, I'm quite keen on walking, and we're looking to walk the Camino at the end of the year. So Ernst Gründling has just finished a book called Walk It Off, and he did a 1,000-kilometer trip in the Camino in Spain. Hopefully the health issues will be over and with by that time. I read Catch 22 when I was a kid, and I'm looking to read it over again. And then probably a very interesting book that I would recommend for people interested in health is a book called The Stress Code by Richard Sutton. It's effectively what causes stress and how we can deal with it, which I found fascinating. So yes, lots of different things.
Okay. And when it comes to the business side, if somebody is listening right now and they want to get into franchise or start a business, are there any business book that you will say, listen, you have to read it? For example, the E-Myth or E-Myth Revised.
I can't think of anything right now. I think the journey that I've had, first of all, in the context of the family background that I grew up in, so it was part of our culture. We were all sort of schooled at the dining room table that part of dinner time conversation was going to be something about business. I think the biggest thing that I learned in the process when I started is that I knew nothing. But the context behind that is it doesn't matter. The issue really is just start. You can imagine 25 years back when I brought cash converters into the country, the amount of landlords that wanted to lease us property was zero. The amount of bankers who wanted to lend us money was also zero. So whatever idea that you have, you're probably going to come up with a lot of resistance to it. But you're going to have 99.5 people out of 100 tell you you can't do it. And I suppose my biggest guidance or suggestion to anybody starting their own business is ignore everybody. As long as you have the passion for doing what you want to do, get out there and just do it.
I like that. And speaking about landlord, who was the landlord and which store was it that they said yes?
So it was in fact Brawl down in the Western Cape. The first store that we opened was in Paro in the Shoprite Mall. And yes, Brawl, after we'd banged on their door often enough and listened to the answers that we didn't want, I think finally they just said, you know, I've got enough. That's another thing about business. You really do require tenacity. If somebody's giving you an answer that you don't really want, you need to ask the question in a different way so they get to the answer of yes. And yeah, so we managed to convince Brawl to rent us that site. We managed to convince Nedbank to lend us some money after a lot of hard work. And as they say, the rest of the history. We're now celebrating our 25th year in the country.
25 years, quarter of a century. Now, you mentioned that now in year 2020, you have over 90 stores. So when in the beginning, after how many stores did you decide to franchise?
Good question. So the philosophy really is before we started franchising, we needed to understand how this business worked. So part of the reason for buying an international franchise and the premier brand within this industry worldwide is that I had no experience in either franchising, retailing, or the industry that we'd bought into. So the idea was, as with any franchises, you buy into a proven business model and you buy the rights to use the brand. So we got the license from Australia. Cash Converters was started in Western Australia in Perth in 1984. We bought the license for Southern Africa. That gave us the opportunity to go and train in Perth. And in fact, I was there for 2 or 3 months. And after I'd left GenCorp, went to Perth, did the training, and then came back to South Africa. Our view was, before we were starting to franchise, was that we needed to understand the model. So we needed to get in there and literally get our hands dirty. So I ran that first business with partners of ours for a good 2 years before I got out of the store. We sold that on to a franchisee, and effectively started franchising in the Western Cape for what must have been through to about 98, 99. So 4 or 5 years over there. We've been most established in the Western Cape. In fact, our first franchisee that we signed is still with us today, still operating in Wynberg in Cape Town. That's 25 years later. What we did then was that I focused on the development of the territory in the Western Cape until about 98, 99, and then came up here to Johannesburg. The plan there was for a 5-year plan, and I'm still here 20 years later.
And you mentioned that before this you had two other franchises. So what went wrong with those ones, and why did you end up picking cash converters out of the other two?
So nothing went wrong with them at all. In fact, they've been really successful. PostNet, we listed on the stock exchange, sold it into the OneLogix group, and they've grown from strength to strength. Also the premier brand within their particular industry. MultiServe, the business, is also successful. It's a 50-year-old brand in the country. Really what we realized after a while was that we simply didn't have the management capacity or the financial capacity to build all these businesses at the same time. So we needed to make a decision, and I suppose probably more in line with my character, the cash converter brand fitted me well, and I was very keen on it, and fortunately it's been proved successful over the time.
Okay, and I believe the company's positioning is providing people with access to cash. Now, in the past few years, we know the economy hasn't been doing well. Do you find that more people are selling because of that? Or does it matter when the economy goes up and down? What have you noticed trend-wise?
So we've operated 25 years in South Africa, now 35 years around the world. And the long story short is that the business model is valid in a growing economy, or in fact an economy that is stagnant or shrinking. Having said that, when the economy slows down, people generally speaking are in need of more cash. So the terminology that I use is it's similar to the wind being behind us at this point in time. Evolutionarily speaking, we started the business out as just retailers of second-hand household goods until around about 2008-2009, after the National Credit Act had been implemented, we started the money lending portion of the business. That now comprises close to 40% of the business.
Sure. Wow. And I mean, there's two relationships that's in the franchise. So one end, you have to keep the franchisees happy. On the other end, they have to keep the customers happy. Do they ever come to you with problems that they can't solve, that you were just stomped? Can you give us an example?
Yes, fortunately not that often, but I mean, we're there as their support base. So maybe you can view it as the front line of the brand, interfacing with our consumers on an annual basis, and we do 2-3 million transactions a year through the network now. So you're going to have circumstances that are out of the ordinary, and then that comes through the organization to ourselves. Generally speaking, those are solved by, again, going back to the human relationship part of things and trying to understand why the customer is as unhappy as he is in that particular set of circumstances. And funnily enough, we keep records of all of these things. And
Oh, really?
In that context, we have less than 1,000 complaints a year that come through to our head office environment. In other words, the 3 million transactions we do translate to less than 1,000 complaints a year.
That's a very good record.
We think it's a good one.
Okay, and then Richard, the final question. What is a big focus for 2020?
So 2020 has two focus areas. Firstly, to grow our network. We think we have one of the best business models and franchise systems.
So you want to grow more stores?
Correct.
Okay.
And then secondly, continue the migration or the journey of digitization in our business. So we're putting a lot of resource into that, and there'll be some very exciting new developments coming to the market shortly.
And do you have a target? Like, I want to open, let's say, the target will be 200 stores, and then I'll call it quits, or 300 or 500. Do you have a number, or you just want to be like the Hulk, get bigger and bigger and bigger?
So I don't think we have an exact number. I think we think we're nowhere near maturation in Southern Africa. I think the really exciting part about it is expansion into Africa. So we've recently secured the license for Sub-Saharan Africa. We've partnered up with some very solid business people for that, and we will be growing the Cash Converters brand into Africa during the course of this year.
Great. Well, I wish you all the best, and thank you again for your time, Richard.
Thanks, Charles.
This podcast was brought to you by NetBank. Stay tuned for more on franchising, or search NetBank Franchising for valuable information. See money differently. NetBank.